We have 10 or 14. That's pretty good. 15. We have 12, 11.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ready?
Okay, boss.
She's ready.
Welcome, everybody, to the next installment of the transportation journey. Tonight, we're going to talk about congestion. Senator Boquist, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues. If you'll look to my left, your right, up on the screen, you'll see the beginning of death by PowerPoint. There are 49 slides, and luckily, we're going to go through about half of them with less than about 10 seconds each. However, in front of you, you should have a stack of paper, and I want to make sure you have that. You should have a sheet that lists the list of projects that came out of the congestion group, because you won't be able to see the screen. The second thing, you'll have a staple group of three spreadsheets which list projects which we're going to go through, and again, it will be on the screen, but these are provided for you to look at. And then you'll have two sets of colored paper. One of them says Course of Action 2, and one of them says Course of Action 1. And for the members of the audience behind me, these are, in fact, on OLIS in the PowerPoint, and they'll be embedded in the PowerPoint. What you see to the left is the lead slide for the four members of the congestion work group. How we're going to go through the presentation this evening is I will make the presentation of the PowerPoint. The director, Garrett, is to my right. He is here for answering technical questions. ODOT did not make the slides. The legislature did. But there are technical issues that are in here that he will be able to answer if you have them. After we're done speaking and questions are done, then you'll look to the right hand of the slide that's right up here, and you will notice that my deal is we have four members of the work group. In my work group, people were voluntold. They got to participate. If they walked in the room, including the media, I went around the room and made them speak every evening so that we would get input from them, so that everybody's in here, and those four members will come up and give their sort of overview of it. As we go forward, I just want to review the charges that we had. These are the same charges that all of the members got. If you look up there in the highlight, which is the important part, is we were tasked to look at congestion, look at the cost benefit of what investments we might do, to review and see whether toll revenue could be part of a bonding project in the funding, how to review mega projects, whether a surtax or some sort of other new taxation to replace gas tax would work, and that's the key point, it's replacement, not in addition to. And then the next slide we have were actually revenue. Each of the work groups, I think if you know, were asked, you know, what are, how much would you spend on bond proceeds, revenue sources again, how much does each source raise, and the list of questions. None of these should be, you know, odd. I'm simply refreshing them to each of you so that you're aware of them. Again, when we were looking at revenue and we were going through our work group, we used a lot of the same resources the other of you did, which were the governor's study, OTC study, so on and so forth like that. Additional task list that was added later on due to the good co-chairs, and specifically the co-vice chair came up with another list and asked that we'd all look through this particular list as members of our work groups. Once again, you'll see some repeating and some common themes, the feasibility and surtax, congestion mechanisms and tolling mechanisms, mega projects, how to manage federal funding sources. I see Representative Smith was here. I anticipated four questions on federal resources from him, and he's not here. That's good. Also for us to identify, you know, what are common state, county, and city accountability issues that would be raised, because, of course, we're talking about congestion, the metro area, and these are fairly substantial projects. Our last charge, of course, was accountability. Everybody has been doing accountability. No, that is not my car. I did not wreck that. I will, for $50, tell you which member's car it is, though. The state of accountability for the state, for the counties, for city, for us, the legislature. Of course, whatever we do, if it's doing long-term, and we've all envisioned we were going to do long-term, you're going to see us lay out a 10-year minimum plan with a series of things out to 25 years. And in doing that, unfortunately, the next legislature 2 years from now, after I'm recalled for voting for this, will have the opportunity to repeal this. So just keeping that in mind as we go forward. How our work group met is we did have 12 meetings, 12 formal meetings that came about. We had at least a dozen presentations from a variety of groups coming in. We had dozens of presentation papers for those individuals who couldn't come, and then we produced a lot of paperwork. I am from a forestry and timber district, and so we were doing the full employment for the International Paper Company. You'll also look, and you're going to see in a few minutes, that we outlined a data set of projects. We then developed three courses of action, which you're going to look at all three courses of action this evening and get to look at those. We have about 7 pages of group notes. I think each of you received a copy of those group notes, and there are detailed answers to probably some of your questions in those. And then we held about 4 or 5 gatherings afterwards to do the PowerPoint. My PowerPoint was a little bit rusty, so we had to have 4 or 5 meetings because I could not keep up with my PowerPoint Ranger techniques. The one good thing that is done is the good Div Fairy is dead in our work group. Everybody is tired of me standing in front of a whiteboard with a crayon making them ask questions. So I'm sure they're going to be glad my work group is done. So the work group results. The first thing we did is have to identify the problem in the congestion and the freight mobility. You will note that the 3 pictures of cars, not the car itself and the truck, are all pictures of the metropolitan area. I'm sure everybody in this room has sat in one of these stalled lanes that's there, and everybody has experienced those. Just very briefly, we did not start from scratch. The freight highway bottleneck project list that's in front of you was actually developed with the Oregon Transportation, with OTC, ODOT, and with the freight industry. And so we had a list to start with. This is in your packet. It's too small to read, but in a nutshell, they had a tiered list of congestion and freight projects that were basically bottlenecks. No surprise, there's the magic map. If you look at congestion, and this is actually important, these areas for later solutions, you have the Portland metropolitan area, you have the Salem-Keizer area, then you have Albany and Corvallis going down down the highway, and I'm actually going up and down the road this way right here. And then you drop down into the seismic triangle on the bottom, which is actually Medford-Grants Pass, and then, of course, over to the right where you see the little yellow dot that's here is actually the Bend area right in here. Different look of the same project. This was done by the freight folks. Once again, you can see the dark blue. The darker the blue, the more congestion there is. I'm certain there's members here, especially those of you that live up in the metropolitan area. I'm certain you've probably been stuck right there, or you've been stuck right there for hours on end. I know I have. Another version of the same type of map. The important portions of this, when you look at this later on, is the look on the left-hand side over here, because it has a list of projects and what are some of the possible solutions that we have for congestion and freight mobility. You break this down, Oregon Transportation Commission in 2017 sort of outlined the major problem in the metropolitan area. I will point these out a little bit so that you know what they are, because these are part of the solution. Obviously, you have the I-205 corridor on the right-hand side, the Abernathy Bridge area down in here, and then the Rose Quarter up in here, and then 217 out in this particular area there. Just to show, I want to go back. This is January of 2017. We didn't do anything for 3 years. Hence the problem we face. As Representative Bentz pointed out, we have a backlog. This particular backlog has been going on for a long time. This is, as you can see, a metro slide, which shows the exact same areas 3 years later in which we haven't done anything. What we started out with in our briefings is establish a set of priorities. How will we address the congestion and the freight mobility issues in the corridor? The top of the list, you'll see Rose Quarter and the price tag, which is the number one priority for the area up there, and the 4 members agreed it was the number one priority. $450 million. We're already spending all of the money that Representative Bentz does not have. Then you drop down to the Abernathy Bridge. You'll see we broke that into 2 components. When this was presented to us, it was presented as 3 projects, and we first divided it out into 5 projects, and then we actually divided it out again to 7 projects, because that would allow us, because they were divisible, to do some cash flowing of these projects and do some sooner than later, which you're going to see farther on in the preview. You drop farther down and you see 217 northbound, 217 southbound. If you look on the right-hand side, you're going to see an area where it says an extra $25 million. There is actually phase 2 of these combined 2 two projects, and those are some of the feeder streets. We didn't come to any conclusion and did not delve into any details of those, but what we determined was is that if the metropolitan area up there, and I'm going to use a whole variety of terms because we haven't defined the metropolitan area quite yet, I'm going to explain that later, is we identified that there was probably a $50 million series of projects up there, and we wanted that identified. I think we started out first, one of our members said not no, but something else, and then we kind of got along to, well, we'll at least consider these at a later time. The oddity that is up there are two oddities you have not seen before, and that is right here. We received a considerable briefing on what are called zip lanes, and that is the ability to move the median left and right and create, for example, four lanes in and two lanes out, or two lanes in and four lanes out. And we decided and we tasked, and ODOT has been very responsive in trying to track that down and find out if there are short-term solutions maybe using this technology. And, of course, it is just a temporary solution because we can't build major projects too quickly. The next item that you'll see on there right here is congestion pricing. Congestion pricing is not tolling. It is considerably different than tolling, but then there is pre-construction tolling in there too, and what we in our discussions sort of learned is that it is a risky business. The state of Washington started it in 2007. I would say the political polls from 2007 would match what we are here, and now it is amazing what people will pay to be in the fast lane a decade later, and it is amazing that they raise more than $2 billion a year in the Seattle metropolitan area for their transportation system. Going on, as we came through these projects, three projects sort of jumped out to us that weren't in our box. I think they were closer to representing Bence's box, but we identified those as priority areas. The actual climbing lane, which is the first one up there through Wolf Creek area, sort of was identified as a safety issue. It is on some of the congestion, lighter congestion areas that are there. A seismic issue, which is a lane widening down in 97 in the winter operations. We did not have a solution for them, but we wanted to put them and present it to you that these were three areas that we think need to be addressed by the committee at a later time. In addition to that, then we came up with the expanded list. And when it says 10 years plus, it's actually not really 10 years. You're going to see in the modeling that we do later on that many of these could actually be done in the next 2, 4, 6 years and could, in fact, stretch up to 15. But we were working on a spreadsheet that only had so many lines and so many boxes, and so we could only fit 10 years in one view in front of us. The important part of this, even though there's no order on them, is you'll see that they're from MPOs, Metropolitan Planning Organizations. As example, the very top first one, Albany I-5 auxiliary lanes. This is a congestion project that's been identified. And if I scrolled back through the maps, you would see these all sort of match up in some of the color areas for congestion that's out there. But the important part about this is there is a potential solution for these. We're not quite as doom and gloom as our good leader is from the other work group. But what we did realize, like Representative Bence did, is there is not enough money. There are too many bridges, and you can't fit that 10 pounds in the 5-pound bag. Now, I was going to be quite colorful, but in the presence of ladies, I'll skip that right now. But the bottom line is we did not have enough money, and so we started going back and trying to identify what to do. I actually indoctrinated my four members, and lots of people back here are your future revolutionaries, on the military decision-making process, because we started through developing a whole series of course of actions. And now the expert in the legislature who get a raise is Patrick, because he now knows how to do this and develop these courses of action. And you don't only develop the courses of action just because it's the right thing to do, but you try and identify the wrong thing to do down through the series of planning events. We then went back and sort of reprioritize the data set that we have. This is slightly different than what you saw before, because if you look at the bottom, down here in the very bottom right here, is that the four members in looking at it decided instead of doing a $35 million active traffic management on both Interstate 5 and on 205 simultaneously, that we should focus first on 205, correct the bottlenecks there, because remember, the number one project is over on the Rose Quarter, on I-5. And so if we started doing too much too fast, we didn't think it would work out as well as we'd like it to. Now, there is all kinds of opinions. You might not agree with this. I know that there are members sitting to my right that don't necessarily agree with it. That's up for discussion for everybody else. So the courses of action, and I'm going to go through these sort of quickly because we're going to land on one of them that's our recommendation. And these courses of action are in this piece of paper that you have right here that has a staple on it, so because you may not be able to see it. So if you take that first course of action, course of action number one at the top of it, and I will point with the pointer so you can look at your paper. Down the right or the left-hand side, that's this side right here, there's a series of projects that are on there that are active traffic management, and that's where I talked about before. Active traffic management is putting in lights and entryways and... Help me out here. What else is active traffic management?
Variable message signs, variable speed signs, just a host of issues that we believe in, improve safety as well as traffic flow, removing the friction along the corridor.
Okay, thank you. And then the corridor bottlenecks are actually little mini projects, and then dropping down
through
there.
Senator, could you hold on a second here? Senator Johnson.
I was trying to be funny, and the moment came and went. It's that sign on 205 that says, if you're headed to Portland International, here's United Airlines' number so you can change your reservations.
Kind of.
Well, Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, I would just point out that you don't go there because you use your own airplane most of the time.
Touche.
So.
That's Capoose International.
That's right. Capoose, some of us call it.
It's hard to get there, too.
If you look at the, you go down that left side, the other interesting thing that we started looking at these, so as you know you're going to see it later on, is these are smaller projects in which we started talking about as a group moving away from complete bonding and cash flowing. And so those were opportunities there we could identify cash flowing. I do want to talk about the two that are there. You'll see right up here is Abernathy Bridge. And Abernathy Bridge on 205 would normally be connected, and it is later, with the 205 widening on the opposite end. We split those out in the initial course of action we had for timing purposes. There may be, and you're going to see later on, some opportunity to combine those two together and do some savings. Our concern was, though, is because remember we said on our priority list that the 800-pound gorilla is right there. That is the Rose Quarter, and we didn't want to have 205 torn up at the same time Rose Quarter is. This is the most aggressive of the slide you're going to see, and the reason it is, you'll see that Abernathy Bridge and 217, which are right in here, the earliest we can start construction on those due to planning and everything else is 2 years out in front of us. And it is believed that even though we might be able to push it up, Rose Quarter could not begin till the beginning of the fifth year, which is 4 years in front of us. And again, it's the number one priority. The interesting thing you'll see on here, if you look across, is it's basically a little over $1 billion. We're spending more of Representative Bentz's money that he wants for pavement and maintenance and everything else like there. However, in early discussions with the metro area, which includes the Port of Portland, TriMet, Metro, the Tri-Counties, the three counties, the City of Portland, and everybody combined, they raised the possibility that they might be willing to fund half, I'll say that again, half or even maybe 60%, or us 60, them 40% of these projects. So what we did is start looking at these and saying, how would we time phase sequence these if they were going to pay half of the cost and share half the cost with the state, which is why you see some of the half numbers. We came to the conclusion that you could use 4 cents statewide tax dollars, that's down here you'll notice, and pay for all of these projects on this 10-year course of action, or 2 cents, the equivalent of 2 cents. And I want to emphasize the equivalent of 2 cents because the gas tax is a diminishing return. The gas tax is not going to solve our problems in the future, and so we need to find another mechanism. But the equivalent of 2 cents of the state's funding would actually pay for half of these billion-dollar projects. I want to move on to the next congestion course of action, and we're going to come back to this later in somewhat detail. It is really not much different than the first course of action other than retiming. And you'll notice over here we looked at the ability to do and do cost savings for I-205 Abernathy Bridge and to do the I-205 Abernathy Bridge and I-205 simultaneously. You'll notice that there's some wording on your spreadsheet that's important. It's in the middle line right down here, and that is the number one priority is to get Rose Quarter going. So if they cannot come up with a time phase sequence to implement at the beginning of year two, It's actually year three right here, 2 years out. For both I-205 projects, then they need to kick one to the end to ensure they can start Rose Quarter on time. We did have a lot of testimony from engineers and folks that, and construction folks that are in the room behind us right now, and what they pointed out is they believed in conjunction with a variety of design, build, and different managements with ODOT that they could actually meet an aggressive schedule. Now, everybody admits that they're going to get lots of gray hair out of this, but it may be possible to do it. Once again, you'll look on the left-hand side here that goes up and down this side. These are immediate projects, immediate things to try and reduce congestion and increase freight mobility. You'll see a little bit of busy work at the bottom left-hand side of that sheet that's down in this area right here. And so you're familiar with what that is we have existing projects right now that are funded by STIP, GO, and FAST. Those are funding terms, in which we're already doing auxiliary lanes on I-5 that the public will see improvements with. We are already doing I-205 auxiliary lanes. And then the same issue, if you look down before, U.S. Powell Boulevard. Boy, that's been around since the 12 years I've been in here, and we're still trying to find a solution, and we might have addressed one in Mike coming forward. The thing that you also need to be able that there is something else out there you need to be aware of. The very bottom of both these spreadsheets, right down here, there's some little words that says Southwest Corridor Transit and Light Rail. That is not a State of Oregon project. That is, in fact, a series of projects to be done by the Metro organization, and they're going to go out and do bonding on their own. So that's not one of ours, but it does have to do with time phase sequencing. If we do reach a partnership with the Metro area group, and they have to go out and raise a bond of their own in terms of this Southwest corridor, the timing of that compared to the timing of when we would be raising a gas tax or another revenue source needs to be taken into consideration.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
For the benefit of those that were not sitting in these meetings, could you describe the kinds of bonding that would occur in order to satisfy the Southwest Corridor Transit and Light Rail?
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, what the, and this is again not ours, that Southwest Corridor that's out there, the, and after our work group has made a presentation, there will be some from Metro coming up, but generally speaking, they're talking about doing bonding at the local level. They would then use some federal funds to go with that, and then in addition to that, they will look at a variety of revenue sources. And I'm going to let Director Garrett maybe try and field a couple of answers for that, because that gets important in the types of bonding that we're proposing later on.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Matthew Garrett, Director
Senator,
of ODOT.
Just to clarify, I've heard three people up here comment so far that if this is really a $600 billion project, we have a problem. Houston, could you clarify that really isn't?
$600 million to a billion?
It's not $600 billion.
It's not. It's a $2.4 billion project. I think that the billion carried over. What that should read is $600 million.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't know where you're looking. That's okay.
As long as we're
very
clear.
Bottom line,
we kept the beach.
Right. It's Portland's problem. I'm not worried.
I think, Mr. Chairman, to Senator Johnson's question, it's a variety of some traditional resources that will be used, as well as potential property tax for a bond that TriMet may move forward with. So I think those discussions and the various revenue streams are still being evaluated. But with the exception of property tax, it's the usual suspect, so to speak, gas tax, vehicle registration fee that's being looked at.
And co-chairs, Senator Johnson, I just point out, being legislators, I was trying to get $600 billion out of this thing. What are you saying here, okay? going on, and I apologize for that, going on, congestion, or the test work, then come up with a third course of action. I want to talk briefly about this one. It's very similar to the other ones, but the important part of this is actually below the middle line. That's this area right up in here. If you happen to look at that, and we tentatively identified a series of projects, and to everybody's for everybody's information, we actually had representatives of the Eugene Springfield MPO in our meetings with us, and we actually had representatives from the Salem Kaiser MPO in our meetings with us too. And this series of projects that are down below in this area right here, and the ones that are across in this area over here, along with those that are on the one-page sheet that you have that are here, these are projects that we didn't initially put into the number two course of action that we're going to go back to. However, you will see in when we get to some spreadsheets farther along, there's approximately $400 million that would be earmarked for OTC in conjunction with cities and counties and the MPO organizations if they were able to find matching money to address some of these projects. And that's the important thing is, even though they're down below that line, they could in fact happen between the first year one to nine or ten, and then in years, in the out years, they're out there. So please keep that in mind. Once again, of course, our appetite was larger than what our capability to buy for. You will recall we were asked by the co-chairs and the main committee to go look at possible revenue options. In the notes you have that are, that were given to you from the work group, it says we agreed, but you have to go to the top of the list. And actually, what we did is we used an elimination process. And the elimination process was designed as, let's get rid of the ones we know that are not palatable, that we can't do, and let's use those on a list to bring back to the committee for future discussion. Once again, the fuel tax is at the top of it. It's just a reminder that that's 65% light, 35% heavy, and that actually carries across many boards and any sort of funding you're raising that goes into the highway fund. Let me say that again. That goes across the board. It's an Article 9 issue of the Constitution, and for anything going into the highway fund. That's an important point later on. And it is gas tax is a diminishing word. Vehicle registration fee, we discussed at length, along with the title fee, and you're going to see some charts a little bit later on in which we're looking at these and saying, how could they be tiered in a manner that better addresses the closer to the road usage that they're doing? For example, we all know that the higher mileage vehicles don't burn as much gas, and therefore it's not equalized, middle of the road, so on and so forth. And we're going to come back to that later because we have some charts to show you there. And so we looked at the vehicle registration, the title fee, as being a tiered system. You may, many of you House members know that Representative Rayfield has presented a very similar system, which has, I don't know, five or seven tiers and enough mathematical formulas that only only Wayland back here somewhere will be able to figure it out to calculate it. And what we did is said, well, maybe we just start with a three-tiered system to start with, and we could develop something different in the future. Normal driver's license fee, I do want to point out, so that you have heart attacks, it's very similar to the $600 billion number down here. If you look right across there, it says new vehicle excise tax of 1%. I'm going to come back to that later to you and talk to you about that in some detail. Then you see the bicycle. We did a talk about the transit tax, and the sort of the discussion was is across the room, not only the four members but everybody else, is that if employer-employee was balanced, then, you know, that should be the starting point for discussions. Pre-construction tolling and congestion pricing, again, are totally sort of different creatures. We're going to talk about those a little bit later. Tiering of the above, tiering being stacking of revenues in a single year versus stair-stepping of the others. I'm going to come back to that. Once again, you know, the problem with the gas tax that we looked at, it's a diminishing return. You get to pay for your pizza, you get to pay for your beer, and the problem is we need to figure out how to pay for the roads. One of the arguments that has always come up about moving away, and you start penalizing, or for example, in the revenue side, if you have a lower licensing fee or titling fee or registration fee for a, quote, a gas guzzler, right, that you're encouraging that perturbed behavior. I sort of want to dispel that myth. The federal EPA has resolved that issue, and as we move forwards to higher mileage standards as we go out, all of the gas guzzlers that are brand new are going to start going up like this. So I just want to point that out to you. Vehicle registration fee at tiers. If you look at the circle that's up here, if you look at three tiers right there, you'll see on the right-hand side that about 50% of the vehicles that are registered in the state of Oregon get between 0 and 20 miles per gallon, and 20 to four, about 48, or on this side right here, got 40 miles per hour. And then, of course, the place we all want them is up here. Only about 2% are in the Prius category, electric car category, so on and so forth. And when you start moving from the gas tax to something that's more road-related, our hope and our goal here is to get this little group right here to start expanding out. The chart that's on the right-hand side is just for your edification, and since you're all the same age I am, we give you a big version of it so you can look at later. Okay. Moving on to pre-construction tolling or congestion pricing in 2 years. what we learned in discussions, a lot of discussions with the state of Washington and looking along with our own people from ODOT in a whole series. If you go on OLIS online, you'll find all kinds of presentation on pre-construction tolling and congestion pricing. Believe it or not, there are people who will pay $15 or $16 up in Seattle to go in the fast lane for only 2 miles because they want to get home. It is unbelievable what people will do when they have the opportunity. The important thing about this, though, in pre-construction tolling and congestion pricing is in the lower right-hand corner, there are some opponents to this around here, is there is options in which we can actually make free lanes so that individuals wouldn't have to pay. If you go down the left side, what we decided to recommend is front-loading the capacity. What that really means is we have not had large toll projects or a tolling back room, they call it. And a back room is basically the IT projects. You all know how well we are at IT projects. Is that we wanted to look at this and say, okay, if we're going to do this, we need to build the IT in the back room and all of the functions we need first, because no one on the revenue side, if you were bonding it, is going to accept that we're going to be experts at it right off the bat. The two places that you can do this, and this actually comes from that magic three words that nobody wants to spell about a bridge, is we did an investment grade study over here. And if you look here in this area, is the Rose Corridor area and the I-5 corridor, you have to basically do simultaneously either in pre-construction tolling or in congestion pricing, because if not, you can find ways to weasel out of paying the toll and go between the roads back and forth. There are some federal restrictions that were reviewed. There is a much difference in the law of what you can do pre-construction tolling for. That means the money has to be paid for the project you're doing. Congestion pricing is not that way. In the middle of this discussion, just magically, two states, I believe Virginia and North Carolina.
That's correct.
Virginia and North Carolina stepped out of their pilot projects, and we are in the process in the city of Oregon in applying to take over those positions on those pilot projects. The important point of this is under the new administration, whether you like it or not, is talking public-private partnership all the way across the board. And we want to be in a position to capitalize on that ability to reach out and get those federal funds that are there. Therefore, if we front-load the ability to do this, what would happen is right down here in the bottom right here is as we have revenue coming in for any of these projects, it would actually replace revenue that we use to do our bonding with. It'd be one-for-one replacement. So we would not use that funding to guarantee our bonding or our payment stream. We would use that instead in addition to, and then, of course, reach agreements with any of our partners that were from the local areas for the distribution or replacement of those funds. That makes sense to everybody? Because it's you think this is complicated. It's going to get more here as we go along. This is the new vehicle excise or privilege tax. What we're talking about here is a replacement for some of the gas tax numbers. We're not, instead of, you know, Representative Bence's presentation where we start at 14 cents or we start at 11 cents, is we use a lower number, start lower, and we start replacing the gas tax with something different. This is literally a new vehicle excise tax. This was in the governor's task force who looked at funding. OTC looked at this. Again, the goal is to try and find a mechanism to move away from the gas tax because of the diminishing returns. New vehicles only. I want to point out to you, and I know that there's two people in the back here, they're very familiar with the lawsuits that revolve around this, is right down here, you'll see right here, this is not subject to Article 9. There are multiple Supreme Court cases that validate it's not been subject to Article 9. That means that it's outside of the highway fund. And so anything we do in this, we want to make sure very careful that it goes towards transportation projects. Notice I didn't use the word highway. I used the word transportation projects to do that. The mechanism to do that, of course, is to create a new fund, and we use this mechanism example for course of action number 2, which we're going to come back to. So, once again, I just want to remind everyone that financing, the difference between tiering, of course, being stacking everything in 1 year, and stair-stepping. We did discuss CPI and type indexing on the right here, and came to the conclusion it would be better to have a very definitive amount, sort of like Representative Pence's slides came out, if you did 1 cent or 2 cent or so on and so forth, so you have definitive for this going out there. So, if you look at this, we have all these sort of financing things that are out there. How do we afford to reduce congestion as gas tax declines? first answer to this is we partnership with the Metropolitan Planning Organizations and the travel manager, or the transportation management areas. We leverage it with federal funds over here. The MPOs are these creatures in here, and I know many of you have no idea what an MPO is. You know, it's not a monkey going someplace or something. Okay? So this is what a Metropolitan Planning Organization is. This is a federal creature, though ironically they receive their federal funding through ODOT at our right, and we give it to them even though they're not a state entity. The existing federal MPOs, if you look up on the left there, there are three of them that are TMAs, Transportation Management Areas. That basically means they're an MPO with steroids. And those are Portland metro area. And it's, when it says plus there, you'll see this right here? It's not like a plus addition. It's like there's some other added areas to this. It's not, it's not clean cut. These are actually sort of new or a different creature in which their boundaries change every time there's a census. So what happens is the federal government does a census, and you have to change your boundaries every 10 years. So the draft action plan to try and, you know, team up with these individuals. And remember, JPAC is actually this one right here. The acronym we use is JPAC. This is the Metro, the Port of Portland, TriMet, the three counties, the major cities, all sitting in the room saying, hey, we would like to work together with you, and we would consider funding half of these projects if we could come up with a mechanism to do this. That sort of mechanism and draft plan is in the column on the right here. We basically convert the MPOs to a state district. This has all been run past legislative council. You mirror their governing bodies. This is not as easy as you think, because these eight cats are all different breeds. So for you cat lovers, you're not getting two Siamese, okay? There are eight totally different entities, and they're structured eight different ways. So it's a lot of writing downstairs for Mr. Dale and some other ones to make this thing work. The purpose of the joint fund and working them is, of course, focus right here on congestion relief. And carbon reduction related to transportation. You see, this is vehicle equivalent. Again, we're not out here making green cars. What we're doing is trying to find a way to do vehicle equivalency. So, for example, if you can reduce 10 trucks off the road, how do you do that? So on and so forth like that. 50-50 cost sharing. That's the number we put up there. They came in at 60-40. We countered with 50-50, and you'll see in our projects that we just kind of anded it up and said in one of our modeling we would provide some cash flow to fund some other projects to get closer to theirs. JPAC would be the first one of possibility. These discussions have been ongoing with our work group. You may have seen a little bit in the news. Most of their elected officials have been up here talking with them. We have a long ways to go and a short time to get there, but we can still do it in the next 6 weeks. Another important part is at the very bottom right here. I said there's excess funds, and that is in the future, OTC Plus. And when I say OTC Plus, I'll come back to that a little bit later to talk to you, because you remember the traditional split is 50-30-20. That's state, counties, cities. And so we've tried to mimic a model very similar to that. This is the theoretical construct right here of what we're talking about. It's the congestion relief and carbon reduction fund, or we use the existing transportation infrastructure bank. Again, this is a transportation replacement type of fund. It's outside of the highway fund. So let me walk through how this in theory would work. First thing I want to make sure everybody understands is right now it is not subject to Article 9 of the Constitution, which means it's outside of the highway fund. So this creature right here, Transportation Infrastructure Bank, already exists. In working with the Treasurer's Office, another that is a bonding authority, that Transportation Infrastructure Bank. We also can use what are called state road bonds. And state road bonds are not part of the highway fund. They're actually backed by the general fund and general fund accounts. And then in addition to that, COPS. But what we're basically talking about here is create a new standalone similar to what the highway fund is. Walking down through it, the excise vehicle tax that we're talking about for new vehicles would fund it. We'd also have congestion pricing and pre-construction tolling revenue flow into that account for the major projects. It's self-supporting, as I pointed out. We have to be fenced funds to make sure that we have the split and it isn't rated by some other means that are out there. Initial project list would come off one of the course of actions we have. The secondary list, which if you remember, if you want to go back to course of action number 3 on this here, there's a list of projects that are down there. And that's what we're talking about there is we the legislature would lay out the first series of projects, and then we would task the Oregon Transportation Commission along with joint input from ODOT, but a kind of a voting block, so I'll show you in a minute, with the cities and counties to plot out the future. This is a 50-50 split. You'll see that kind of the governing board right up here, made up of three county representatives, advisory board, and two city members. Local buy-in for statewide revenue, which is why you see the 50 that's right here. When we're up here, you look, I've got it there, the 50, 30, 20. Local buy-in to use the funds instead of the normal split that's out there. But again, looking at a 50-50, you know, construct of half funding from the MPOs or the locals in the state. One of the options we talked about in order, and this is, you have to word this very carefully because of bonding issues, is you look right here. One of the things that we could look at for accountability right here, and this is right here on this line, 89%, is we could actually, because these are long-term projects, these are 2-, 4-, 6-year projects, is the legislature could ask ODOT or the joint group to come back every year. And so we could actually bond the full amount of a project, fund it, authorize spending at 80%, and then ask them to come back on an annual basis to make sure they're meeting their objectives. Another way for you accountability people to look at mechanisms for doing accountability that's out there. One of the things I'll point out, though, that is important down here, because this is a new construct, and this is after the treasurer's required reserves, because we have to build up some reserves in these accounts in order to ensure the general fund didn't get tapped if we made shortfalls. And so the treasurer is looking at this. All the savings and funds would roll forward for other projects. So basically, we're building a 25-year block and plan to be able to go forward and identify these major projects instead of doing it the old-fashioned way of let's come in every 4 years and build a list of projects that we can, you know, farm out to the members and get people to vote for. We're actually developing a 25-year mechanism to go out and address these in a logical way. But the legislature, if you see there, the legislature, we'd come back on an annual basis through the normal ways and means process and identify, you know, where these projects are going, what their accountability is, so on and so forth. This down here is very important. Establish legal and financial fail-safe in the statute. For those who have not been here, I guess everybody here has been here a long time. So, well, I guess Representative Viola is not. This is the fail-safe. Just to be very clear, we think we're on very solid ground, but you all know how this works. We put it right into the bill. If we get challenged, it goes straight to the Supreme Court. And if we lose in the Supreme Court, then we revert the money back to the legislature so that we can reapply the funds as necessary. This is a work in progress, a complete work in progress across the board, but we're trying to think outside of the box than what we have in Borough. So let's go back and show you what this looks like. You've seen this slide here. This is what Course of Action 2 is, which is all those major projects that weren't $600 billion, but they're $1 billion and we can't afford them. This is what they look like right here. Up here are the other smaller projects that are already funded that we talked about that's on the piece of paper. You'll notice in the lower left-hand corner, as was pointed out, right down here, you'll see if we do these projects, there's $100 million in maintenance and preservation savings. So even though it's a $1 billion project, we're saving $100 million right off the top of this thing. Then by going partnerships with the MPOs that are out there, we start going back to this project sheet right here. This is Course of Action 2, which you might pick up and look at. You go to the right-hand side. Don't worry about the $600 billion that Metro or TriMet's going to raise. That's down here. That's their $600 billion. You don't have to worry about that. If you go back up in this corner up here, you'll see the bonding is $1 billion. The subtotal for cash is $123 million. That would be cash projects that's paid for out of cash, other joint account. And if you see the split, the state would end up paying about $598 million versus the MPO at $525. Now, if you go to your nice colored sheet, hard to see this one up here. If you go to your very first colored sheet that's up there, and it says course of action, looks like this. It says course of action number 2 on it. If you look at that sheet, and this is an example, a static example, so to speak, even though it has inflation in it, when I mean static, what I'm talking about is it only has these projects in it and only has the one revenue source that we proposed inside of it, which is the 1%. But if you start looking at that sheet, and I want to point out to you, right down in the lower, this corner, make sure I'm seeing it right here, right down here, is where the 1% vehicle excise tax would be. You see that the only thing you're raising on there, if you look at that sheet, you'll be able to look across there and see you have 1%. That's the only tax that's in this one, which is this line going right across here to right there. And then if you look up above and you start across, what's important for us besides funding it, half of the funding out of this is paid for in this area. This is actually a self-imposed series of financing put in by the right here, right across there, by the MPO, the JPAC, and they would, in a nutshell, assess themselves 3% gas tax and 5% registration fee, and then carry that over year 2, year 4, and year 6. If you start driving down to the, looking at the bottom of that, you see where I was talking about for other projects, this line item that's right here is revenue left over that would be in this fund. That line right there, on a yearly basis, you can see the numbers that go across there. For example, in the first year, there'd be an additional $32 million to do other projects with other MPOs that are out there. The following year, it rises to $40 million, then it goes to 56. It goes across in a series of distributions that are across there. All told, in this lower corner right there, under this proposal, besides doing everything that is on course of action number 2 that's there, there would be an additional amount of roughly $400 million, actually $387 million, to do these other projects that are out there. And this is just an example to let you know how it would work. I'm going to go on and talk about a few other things and then come back to a combined worksheet. The other thing that I point out to you is that ODOT, Waylon's in the back here. Waylon, raise your hand. This is the guru back here. He and Mazen. Mazen's back there. Mazen, raise your hand wherever you're at. Okay, they two have been fighting about these numbers. They sort of agree on the numbers, but not the inflation. But the important part is this tool is interactive. Our subcommittee members have it, and you can actually enter all your own numbers in there. So you can do your own calculations and decide if you did a one penny here or you did a 5 cent there or whatever you want to do. You can actually matrix it itself. And all of you are going to get this. You're going to get a lesson on it on Wednesday night when we have revenue here. Just the answer, one of the questions we were asked is, what do we get out of this? This is the modeling. This is the modeling that was done before we actually went through our entire process, so it does include Cornelius Pass. I know there's somebody in the room that would like to have Cornelius Pass included, and this happens to include Cornelius Pass. But if you look up here, besides the $100 million in maintenance and preservation savings, you'll see the reduction in hours for non-recurring incident delays. You'll see a reduction in a recurring congestion delay reduction. Reduce delays across the board. This does not include congestion pricing either, by the way. Annualized savings cost of about, modeling of about $3,100 per vehicle. I think most of the people in the metro area, those of us even in the south, I want to point out the reason the four members struck upon we had to resolve the metropolitan area problem is that when you leave my district and go north in a truck or a car, your opportunity is to go north on I-5 or 205 in a truck or a car for the most part. The passes do not sustain enough of them to go over the mountain the other direction, and so most of our industry freight and everything else must go through Portland, which is why we said, okay, why would Senator Johnson and I, who aren't from Portlandia, agree to do this? And the answer is very simple. We have to go through there to get anyplace else. Okay. Additional discussions we have, we'll run through very quickly because we were asked to do that. Orphan highways, that sort of came up. You'll see up there, we suggested we need to do 3 pilot projects on orphan highways or transfers. Once again, I've been in this building long enough to know that, you know, Cornelius Pass and Powell Boulevard have been on the plate since Andy and I came in here in 2005. We were talking about them then. And it's now 2017, 12 years later, and we haven't seen the light at the end of the tunnel, but we think we need to, and we think one of the mechanisms we put up might, in fact, help do that. Additional discussions about Accountability Plus. Again, that's not more accountability. That's a whole variety of issues. We talked about it before, possibly using 80-90% funding and then having the ODOT and OTC come back on a yearly basis and report to the Ways and Means Subcommittee. Empower the Oregon Transportation Commission. Standardization. Boy, we found this one. What we do not have other than financial data is no standardized data. That is a big problem we found in us trying to figure out, well, what's going on out in these other areas other than the metropolitan or other than what ODOT has. And, you know, what we said is we really need to have a standardized reporting mechanism for all, for the state, for all counties and all cities. So you can look at one sheet of paper for each county or city and then know what it is and get that standardized reporting. Future step increases subject to OTC reporting. Once again, we said if we were going to actually, as Representative Bentz pointed out, and say we're going to raise the gas tax 2 cents before we actually kicked in that 2 cents, maybe 2 years down the line, is have the Oregon Transportation Commission come back and tell us what they've done. So the next legislatures beyond us have the ability sort of kind of veto it and go backwards and say, hey, this isn't working out. Let's look at this. streamlining contracting process to include including inputs. This is the regulatory issue Senator Johnson is so fond of, and many others here, is we need to streamline it, especially if we want to do Rose Quarter in 5 years or less. Time-phase projects to avoid mega-project over, and then cash flowing, time-phase cash flow. Instead of bonding everything and going in debt for the next 35 years, do bonding. That brings us to mega-projects. We had a lot of information. We did a lot of research on mega-projects, a lot of presentations by our own ODOT-STAT, WSDOT. All this stuff is on OLIS. Bottom line, coordination, communication, and use multiple delivery methods. I mean, it all boils down to you need to coordinate, and don't stop coordinating, and don't stop communicating, especially if a mega-project includes tolling, pre-construction tolling, or congestion pricing. It's all about communications. Kind of wrap up here what we were asked to do. What does this look like if you sort of rolled in representing Bence's work group, Senator Byer's work group, representing McEwen's? You see this, you kind of combine this together. What does this sort of look like to leave you something to, you know, shock you? If you look at the combined course of actions set up there, it's the second one of these big blue sheets that looks like this. And again, on Wednesday, you'll have an opportunity after you've taken your high blood pressure medicine on the price tag here. You'll be able to actually play with the spreadsheet yourself. But you'll look at that spreadsheet you have in front of you. If you look in the left column right here, we loaded it with a 14-cent fuel tax based over a 10-year period. That's the 14-cent slide minus the stair-stepping that Representative Bence proposed, but it has stair stepping. You see, it's 6 cents, then two, going across. Registration fee, even though we had a tiered registration proposal of 10, 20, 30, when you plug it into the formula, it kind of bounces out to the 20 cents that's right in here. And then in the out years, you start adjusting that formula for the EPAs and the fuel mileage on those vehicles that are going out there. All toll, we actually put in the bicycle excise tax, the statewide payroll tax there. You can look on the spreadsheet, and you look down in the bottom right here, you can see the 10-year increases that are there. This is the 10-year increase column right here. Over 10-year increase on this spreadsheet, you have 10 years, 14-cent increase on fuel tax, registration $40, title fee $40, license $20, and then some percentages going down, and then, of course, the MPO numbers down at the bottom down there. The most interesting thing to look at that, though, is that here in this column right here, at 10 years, the project costs for our initial projects are still $1.1 billion, but in new revenue, it's $5.5 billion. Right there, over 10 years. And see, the point here is not just to look at 1 year. In this column right here, you got $5 billion. And then you start looking down and seeing your distribution to the state, which is the number down in here. You see those. And then county distribution that goes to the counties is over $1 billion. Cities, over $878 million. This kind of gives you a formula to play with. Again, when we look at because of the work we've been doing on our work group, you'll get to see these spreadsheets on Wednesday. And you'll actually have them electronically, and they'll be online, you'll be able to play with them. In addition to that, the magical spreadsheet guy back here has a formula in which you'll be able to plug in, and we can identify by county, we'll be able to identify for you by county and by city how much additional revenue any one of the formulas you have will do. With that, the sky is blue. I have answered that in military courses many times before, and I'm not going to answer tonight, but we'd be happy to entertain any questions from you prior to the next group coming up and talking.
Senator Monroe.
Yes. On the I-205, it strikes me that you got it cut into two projects, the Abernathy Bridge and the widening. They really both need to be done ASAP. My question is, can you get them both done before you have to start with the I-5 project over at the Rose Quarter?
Co-chairs and Senator Monroe, if we have a horsewhip, the answer is yes, we probably can, but I'm going to let the director disclaim it because we think we can do it, and he's not as confident as we are.
I think we have, for the record, Matt Garrett, Director of ODOT. Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe, it's a good question. It's an issue of timing and design. We, for both those projects, we are anywhere from 2.5 to 3 years out should we receive the money to go to construction, because there's design work that needs to be done. We're a little further advanced in one or the other. One could argue you need to prepare the bridgehead to receive the lanes coming in. So might you have a conversation about leading with the Abernathy Bridge, then follow it with the widening of the lanes from Stafford to the bridgehead? Now, that was the original conversation. We brought in professionals from the consulting engineers, the design engineers, as well as the folks from AGC, the folks who construct, and we had a conversation about procurement methodologies. So you can do different design, moving away from the traditional design, bid, build, to something where you incorporate design and build, or there's a CMGC type process where you get folks together early on. And that's where you started to see some shifting in terms of timelines here. So I think that is a pathway that we will continue to move down, and I think there may be some opportunities to combine the two and deliver as one project. To the earlier point that Senator Boquist made and Senator Johnson continued to make, how can we pinch down on the project delivery window here? What does it take? What disciplines? And I think the procurement methodology was something that came forward. So to your question, there may be an opportunity to do just that, and we discussed that.
And my concern would be not having to disrupt that major freight arterial two different times over a 8-year period or whatever.
Well, Senator, I think that's a very good point. It also kind of cleans up a corridor here. If indeed the prize is the Rose Corridor and that I-5 main line, let's see if we can get 205 and all the work that is done early on, and then we'll play itself out over time before we go to the Rose Corridor in that fifth year.
And Co-Chair Senator Monroe, if you look up here, it's exactly what we're talking about. If you see here, this is the combined projects right here, and the important part is exactly what you said, is we need to open up, which is why even in the active traffic management, we said let's do I-205 first. Let's get one corridor done quickly. 5 years is not quick, but as quick as we can get it done. Get that done so that we have that corridor open before we start in this project right here. And then the worst case is, of course, you have landed out, and that is if we can't, then you have to move the widening out in front of you right there. And of course we're the good news is if we decide by July we're going to do something, we add 6 months. You see that timeline up right there? So he knows it's coming, unless of course it's referred, and then we have good planning process to go through.
Senator Johnson?
I just want to use this opportunity to thank Senator Boquist for an enormous amount of work. And if many of you were tired listening to this presentation, think of the forced march across the desert that 12 meetings represented. But he took an enormously complicated subject, got the issue experts before our committee. We didn't always agree on everything, but he ran a process where all voices were heard. And I would just like to acknowledge the extraordinary amount of work that he put into both the meetings and this work product.
Other questions?
With that, Co-Chair, we are going to step off of the design.
Senator, hold on. Oh. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for this work, Senator. Great job. I want to just have you reemphasize the fact that these numbers can be moved and will be moved. I anticipate that this will be the starting point for a great deal of lobbying by a great deal of folks. But it's probably just need to have you repeat that this is a draft and that these numbers can be moved all over the place.
I would remind you and members of the audience, this is on OLIS, right? Okay, this is up on OLIS. Mm-hmm. If you go back here, this word right here is sample. It's Sierra Alpha Mike Papa Lima Echo. That's a sample. And down here in the board is draft. That's Delta Romeo Alpha Foxtrot Tango. This is purely a draft. And you're going to get this play toy here. If you want it sooner, any one of the subcommittee chair members can email it to you. You can screw it up. Trust me, I know how to screw up IT. I did screw it up, and Waylon had to come save me several times. But you're going to get this on Wednesday, as Representative Benz pointed out, and you'll actually be able to enter your numbers any place you want to. And you can actually go back to your own MPO. For example, Representative Olson could go down to the Albany area MPO that's down in there, and they could actually plug in their numbers and do their own calculations to see how this would work out. ODOT is more than willing to help work with you on doing that. I mean, it is an amazing tool, because you'd be surprised what you can learn by doing it and the different methods you can use that actually move us away from a gas tax. I'm not advocating doing both simultaneously. What we're trying to do is move away from the gas tax.
Anybody else? Senator Johnson?
That bears some emphasis. The tool that Wayland has developed for ODOT is really extraordinary. We played with it a little bit, but it'll change all the numbers across the screen depending on how you alter the input and show you when you can feasibly do this with available revenues, when the money is inadequate to do projects that you want to do. It is not only a fun tool, but it is an extraordinary learning opportunity to see how all these hydraulics work. And I just want to make sure that Wayland gets the recognition that he deserves, because he's provided his agency with a very powerful tool.
I think with that, co-chairs, I'm going to let the next four presenters come up, because we'd like to have their observations of the work group that we went through. And thank you to ODOT and all of their staff for all the hard work they've done.
Thank you, Senator.
Co-chairs and members, Andy Shaw with Metro was asked to give some reflections on behalf of the region, the Portland region. Our region is supportive of the general direction of this proposal. The concept of the state and regions developing a whole new partnership, a whole new style of working together to build transportation infrastructure is transformative. I want to echo what Senator Johnson said about the leadership that not just Senator Boquist, but the rest of the members of the committee provided in putting this together. For decades, we've not been able to rely on the federal government to provide the level of funding we need to really fund our infrastructure. They've been diminishing their commitment over time. Frankly, the state has not also kept suit with the investments we need. So we really do need collaborative and new ways of new approaches like this to address our critical infrastructure funding needs. Would also say that the work group sort of took advantage of a unique moment where we have a recognition across the state that these bottleneck projects really need to be prioritized, and a commitment locally in our region from elected officials that these bottlenecks also need to be prioritized. So we've got broad agreement in our region to fund these three bottleneck projects, as well as the Southwest Corridor Transit Project. Those go together very, very, they need to be thought of together as a way to manage congestion. We support the concept that's emerging from this work group of matching state investment with local investments, both through the surcharge idea and a ballot measure that's being developed in our region to help fund not just Southwest Corridor, but also a portion of the bottleneck projects. So I think it's important to underscore in those spreadsheets an important aspect of how this would work, and it was our region that proposed these a 9-cent gas tax and a roughly $15 registration fee stepped in over time. A few of us brought that to JPACT at its last meeting and put it up on a whiteboard and talked about it conceptually. We got thumbs up around the table for that idea. A couple important things to note there. Those amounts of revenue raised only within the region would help fund our share of the bottleneck projects plus some local projects of regional significance. And that piece is very important to many members of our region. So we can show our voters and our citizens that we're not only addressing these important highway bottleneck projects, but other important parts of our network that are also related to congestion and slowing people down. If you live in the Portland region, you can name multiple arterials that are also bottlenecks and slow folks getting from home to work or to school. So this partnership, where both the state and locals are co-investing, will require robust engagement between the state and local leadership. Oh, shoot, I forgot my prop. In the work group, we talked about this local match being akin to skin in the game, and then we talked about going Dutch.
Oh. Terrible.
And
so untimely.
I actually had to go across the river to get this. West Hill. But I think this idea of doing this together means that we also have to govern this together. And if we're really going to go Dutch, then we have to agree on the restaurant. We have to agree on the projects we're funding. It has to be something that both the state finds important and our local elected officials find important. So in the greater Portland region, This also was something that I think was a very important discussion in the group. Managing congestion is exactly that. We're not going to build our way out of congestion. We're going to have to find ways continually to reduce congestion. We expect very strong continued growth of population and jobs in the metro area. That means we're going to have more commuters in the metro area over time. And to address that, we're going to have to make investments in all modes in the area. And there need to be in this package not just this emphasis on bottlenecks, but investments across all those modes. And our region needs some room to be able to make additional investments in other parts of the system to manage that congestion. So the priorities for us are the highway improvements, transit expansion, greater active transportation investments, and moving towards congestion pricing so we have additional tools to manage the system we have effectively while making these key improvements. I just want to end by, again, thanking Senator Boqvist and the members of the committee for their phenomenal work in this work group. Their vision and leadership has led us to this place.
Well, let me take this opportunity to give a few comments to you. For the record, my name is Susan Morgan. I'm a transportation policy analyst for the Association of Oregon Counties. Congestion in the metro region rose to the top of the list as your committee toured Oregon throughout the interim. Onion farmers in southeast Oregon, forest products producers in southwest Oregon, and Willamette Valley ag and manufacturing interests all agreed that metro area congestion impacts them just as it impacts the citizens that live with and work in and deal with that congestion daily. The Congestion and Freight Mobility Workgroup took on the challenge of analyzing and unwinding congestion and has produced a strong work product. I want to take a moment to thank the workgroup members, Senator Johnson, Representative Smith Warner, and Representative McLean, and the chair, of course, Senator Boqvist. Senator, with your respectful attention to process, you led a groundbreaking, vibrant, and informed conversation with a broad base of stakeholders. This was a well-attended work group. If stakeholders were late at all in arriving to the meetings on Monday and Wednesday evening, there were no chairs left. And you'll notice if you went up there the next morning, there were no chairs out in the waiting area, because all the chairs have been jammed into the meeting room. It was standing room only, generally. The conversations continued after the meetings and between the meetings. It was one of the most comprehensive and creative transportation discussions that I've ever been involved in. The product of this work group outlines a vision and charts pathways to change the trajectory of congestion and enhance freight mobility. It's a battle plan in the finest sense of the word. This work group took on innovative ways to partner, the power of layering and leveraging revenue across jurisdictions to create the funding stream to pay for much needed additional capacity, innovative ways to schedule projects out over time as funding becomes available and as projects mature through design, engineering, and permitting phases and we're ready to begin construction. Describing a dynamic vision beyond metro congestion and potentially beyond a 10-year time frame and designing innovative tools that'll benefit congestion relief and freight mobility across our state. I want to acknowledge the positive role of the ODOT team in this work group. Director Garrett for answering probably around 100,000 questions and for sharing his expertise, and Waylon for the powerful spreadsheet that allows us to what if and see a big picture and then do another what if and see that big picture. What has emerged is a solid concept that provides additional resources for cities and counties as well under the 50-30-20 formula. AOC is fond of reminding folks, when you've seen one county, you've seen one county. For many of Oregon's counties, this transportation package is about maintenance and preservation, and that's where their investment should be made. But for some counties, it's about major construction projects. If bonding will be a useful tool in some but not all places, there should be a consideration of that, an ability to tweak the template to fit the needs of different regions around the state. Transportation is an integrated system across state, county, city, and district boundaries. The strength and durability of this system is based on our ability to work across boundaries and seek solutions that benefit the whole transportation system and Oregon citizens. This proposal gives us a vision, tools, and a pathway to move forward and do just that. To all the committee members, I thank you all for your great work.
Good evening, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Kobo, representing the American Council of Engineering Companies, our 110 member firms and 3,000 plus employees. I get the pleasure of representing the private sector up here along with the contracting community and making these comments. We all know that Oregon's infrastructure is failing in many ways through the seismic concerns that we have, the resilience concerns, congestion, and our declining quality of life. I would like to mention that we just had our day at the Capitol last week, and I know we came by and saw many of you. We had about 45, 47 appointments, and there is a lot of good support for a transportation package in this building, and I hope that you're talking to your colleagues about that. We would like to thank Senator Boquist and the work group for their leadership. We think it's a game-changing conversation. It's a game-changing in its vision, and the paradigm change here is significant as well. I'm going to go back to December 6th, which was Pearl Harbor Day in 2016. We had invited two legislators, Representative Lively and Senator Boquist, to come speak to our legislative preview dinner at a quality establishment in Portland. And some of the engineers looked at me and were a little dubious about Senator Boquist. And were thinking that, you know, we were going to talk about a 2 plus 2 and a $5 reg fee, and that he was going to be happy with that. And if we fast forward 110 days to today, I had sent out some of this information this morning, and I got a response that said, wow. And I just want to let you know that the change in the perception of what's going on here went from not much to wow, and I want to thank the committee for that. This is some great work. On February 22nd, we presented, along with AGC, one of the evening meetings that we were confident that our shared Oregon firms are able and excited about delivering this package in a timely and cost-effective manner. We are currently underutilizing our Oregon expertise, and many of our individual employees are working elsewhere, but will return to deliver this package. AGC is operating way under capacity and will be prepared to construct the plans. And to the minutes of that evening, there were three presenters, one engineer who talked about local engineering companies will be able to absorb the workload of multiple mega projects, be able to handle projects at the county city level simultaneously, and all projects combined a course of action equivalent to interestingly enough, if we can bring it up to the CRC times two, and can be handled. AGC talked about that OTIA 3, a $1.3 billion construction program, 86% of the contractors were from Oregon. The design build, and construction manager, general contractor are all useful contracting methods. Depending on the need of the project, the more complex the project, the more value from some of these alternative contracting methods. We had an interesting conversation. I thought about cost of bringing construction materials to the job site can vary considerably. Some of it's done, of course, in the middle of the night. We had a significant conversation about the importance of work zone safety. And I think Senator Monroe mentioned something along that line, you know, how do you stage this and how do you do it? And there's a lot of value in separating employees from the moving traffic to keep traffic at highway speeds. And also that many Oregon construction workers and contractors have been working out of state and would happily come back to Oregon for steady work. Tomorrow, ACEC will testify at the ODOT budget hearing to discuss the Oregon Partnership for Effective Transportation Program Delivery. It's a document that we prepared in coordination with ODOT and with the Engineering Union, Association of Engineering Employees. And again, we're being collaborative about this and outside the traditional box, and are excited about this public-private partnership and in a way to deliver the projects. I'd like to remind you all that on election night in November 16, voters on the West Coast passed more than $185 billion in road and transit-related projects. The Bay Area, about $3.5 billion, San Jose, $6 billion, L.A., $120 billion, and there were other smaller ones in California. The interesting thing about California, they have a 66% minimum to get to yes. So 50% plus one doesn't win down there. You got to get to 66% plus one to pass a measure. They had a few in the 60s that failed. And then, of course, Seattle had a $54 billion transit program. So I say this because I believe we should move forward to prepare the best proposal possible. And if it's referred, we should fight and we should educate the Oregon population with modern campaign activities about the aspirational quality of life I think that we all seek, and that seems to be failing us as we move forward. So again, we believe this is transformative thought, which we hope leads to transformative action. This is beyond the norm, and this is the best opportunity to save ourselves and not continue to wait for the feds. We encourage the full committee to seize this impressive work and this opportunity and move Oregon forward. Thank you.
Before Ms. Dilks.
Senator.
I don't know, Mr. Coble, whether or not you're going to touch on this in the public testimony during ODOT's budget hearing, but there had been a suggestion about sort of super project management teams that could act across regions, mm-hmm. and I didn't know whether or not your group had the opportunity to discuss that or you'd visited with AGC about that possibility. You don't have to answer now because you didn't expect this question, but you might give it some thought for tomorrow's public testimony. I don't know how ODOT feels about it, but it was an idea that I thought got some currency during one of our meetings when we were chatting about it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Senator Johnson, I will be prepared. Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight. I'm Angie Dilks, and I'm here representing the Oregon Environmental Council. Senator Bocas earlier joked about how the regulars in the room are glad that the process is over. I will say I'm glad we're in a bigger room because as we had to use sharp elbows to get chairs throughout the process. So that part we're glad for. But in all seriousness, I have been consistently blown away by the productive nature of the conversations at this work group. I think what was exciting to me as a cynical political hack is that members sort of set aside conventional wisdom as to why we can't do big things and actually just thought about it for a while and like what if we could do some of these things. I actually sort of looked forward to the meetings, and that may tell you something about my need for hobbies, but just saying,
strange
that's how
woman.
Good they were. So from OEC's perspective, we are committed to being at the table and would like to see a robust, diverse, and logical transportation package pass this session. We have a few things that we think really should be at the top of legislators' minds as you proceed with this. Dollars should be spent first using what we have efficiently, making sure that it works, making improvements where necessary, using smart technologies, using intelligent designs for ways to move people and goods more quickly without necessarily having to expand roads. Additionally, we see that taxpayer dollars should be dedicated to projects that are reviewed in a rigorous, data-driven, transparent process. That's also known as we don't really like earmarks so much, as will not surprise all of you. We also think, obviously, that the conversation has to include investments in transit operations statewide, bike and pedestrian improvements, and we also would like to see some progress made on congestion pricing. Those are all things that are critical to making this work. Senator Boquist talked earlier about this sort of unique and creative opportunity that we have in the metro area. We acknowledge that those bottlenecks impact the entire state, and obviously, if people are sitting in traffic, that isn't so great either when it comes to the environment. So we're not, despite what I said about earmarks, we're not opposed to this, although we might be in a different situation, because we do think that this is a unique moment in time. We also think that there are a few things that need to be clear about the way this is approached in that area to make sure that it works. Again, projects should be thoughtfully reviewed to make sure that the investment is right-sized, not necessarily all the bells and whistles that everybody wants. We see road widening as a temporary solution. You know, once word gets around that traffic's a little easier to navigate, then people get back in their cars. And so we want to make sure that if we're going to do this, that we do it in a way that actually makes a difference long-term. And we think that the way you do that is you make robust investments in other parts of the system, including transit operations, safe routes for schools, safer streets, sidewalks, crosswalks, better connected bike networks, bike networks, electric vehicles, electric buses, congestion pricing, all of those things that are kind of the ancillary to the conversation we had earlier. Again, we're committed to being at the table, and we look forward to working with all of you to pass a robust and diverse transportation package. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Angie. Any questions?
Angie, one of the things that you, or Ms. Dokes, one of the things that you said that is a little distressing is about earmarks. Mm-hmm. This whole program that you just saw presented is predicated on projects that were identified both by JPAC, Metro, partners. And so it functionally includes these projects because, as Andy's Cup says, that's what we can go Dutch on. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that I can reconcile your remarks about objecting to earmarks with a proposal that has pre-identified projects that can be leveraged at its core.
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, you're right. The two don't necessarily align, but that's why we're here today, to say that in this case we think it's worth pursuing, because we are confident that if this were to move forward, that all of the other investments that I was talking about will also be a part of it. And if that's the case, then we think that there's a way to make it make sense.
Thank you.
There is a difference between prioritizing projects based on need and earmarking, which is usually referred to as getting votes.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Questions of these folks? Thank you very much. Senator, anything else? We're done? Well, this is the fourth. We have the next Wednesday. We'll be talking about this Wednesday. That would be the next Wednesday.
That's correct. You are
correct.
Technically correct.
Next Wednesday.
We'll be talking about financing. I guess if there's any lessons that we've learned in this is when we toured the state, where we heard in every single meeting was people saying, go big. I think this qualifies. With that, anything else for the good order of the order? Seeing none, we are adjourned.
Did you get your